From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today we're checking in with Crane's Detroit Business about the latest in vaccine development for COVID.
The word was that they just paused the trial, and as far as I know, Michigan Medicine is still recruiting.
Also, virtual, remote, and hybrid schools are well underway, and it's a bit different than the normal year.
Like, let's say our cat's just walking around the room. Hey, there's my cat. But in school, you won't be like, hey, there's my cat.
Because your cat doesn't go to school.
No.
And we meet a hip-hop artist from Detroit whose career started taking off around the same time she started following her inner voice.
And I was just listening to what everybody felt was right for me to be putting out there, you know, and then I had to tap into my truth and just live through it on my own. I couldn't let people live my truth for me.
Those stories and more coming up on today's edition of Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're going to check in with some parents listening in on their kids' online learning experience and finding some things missing.
Like, let's say our cat's just walking around the room. Hey, there's my cat. But in school, you won't be like, hey, there's my cat.
Because your cat doesn't go to school.
No.
That's later in the show. But first, we wanted to catch up with what's happening in the medical world as pharmaceutical companies race to come up with a vaccine for COVID-19. Michigan figures largely in those plans, but concerns have cropped up in recent weeks about the safety of at least one of the trials. Jay Green is a senior reporter at Crane's Detroit Business. He covers healthcare, and he's been following the vaccine trials and some other stories of note this week. Jay, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, April. Good to be here.
So we've got two main avenues of drug research underway in Michigan right now. Michigan Medicine is teamed up with the British pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca to test a vaccine created at Oxford. And in the meantime, Henry Ford Health System is also in the midst of a trial for what's called an mRNA vaccine developed by a company here in the States called Moderna. We learned this week that the AstraZeneca trials in the UK were paused because of an unexplained illness. Now, Jay, this was not a case in Michigan, correct?
No, this is somewhere in London where a male patient started to develop some severe neurological problems. I believe it had to do with myelitis in his spine. And it sounds like it was a very severe case. So the word was that they just paused the trial. And as far as I know, Michigan Medicine is still recruiting. So I don't believe that they've stopped their recruiting. They started in late August, early September, about a month after Henry Ford started recruiting for the Moderna vaccine trial. But all the testing, actual testing on the volunteers has been paused, and no other news has come out about that.
Huh. I don't know much about the structure of how these clinical trials work when they're being conducted sometimes across oceans. So you're saying that the research in Michigan may not necessarily be stopped just because what's happening over there was paused?
Yeah, well, they're still recruiting the patients. One of the things about these clinical trials is that they make certain things public, and then they keep other things very secret. The AstraZeneca trial is scheduled to be at either 60 or 80 different sites in the United States for a total of 30,000 people, 15,000 who would get the saline placebo and 15,000 that would get the actual vaccine. It takes a while to get volunteers in each one of these trial sites. And Michigan Medicine, if you do the math, I mean, it's less than 1,000 people that they would be required under this contract to recruit. And I believe it's from ages 18 to 65, and they try to get a cross-section of the community in there. So there's still, I mean, there's a lot of interest in the COVID vaccine.
Right. That's probably an understatement at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they're getting a lot of volunteers, but they can't take everyone. And so I have asked Michigan Medicine and Henry Ford about this, and I haven't gotten much back. I'm going to do a story next week on the concerns that the African American Black community has about the low numbers of Blacks and other minorities in these studies. And I'm trying to get interviews with Henry Ford and Michigan Medicine. But I do believe that they are still interviewing people. It's a long interview process before they can be put on the list. And
sure.
I don't know if AstraZeneca lifts this pause. I'm not sure when. It may be a couple of weeks after that before people in Michigan actually get that vaccine.
Jay, there's another story you've been reporting we wanted to ask you about. A former board member and trustee at Beaumont Health has raised concerns with Michigan's Attorney General Dana Nessel asking for the removal of Beaumont's CEO, John Fox. Now, the board member is Mark Shevsky. Can you explain who he is and sort of what kind of standing he has on the Beaumont board?
He was on the board for 17 years until 2014. That was about the time that the ill-fated merger between Henry Ford and Beaumont collapsed. So he left the board at that point. And I believe when he left, he was vice chairman. He's an attorney in Southeast Michigan and is a donor and a heavy supporter of Beaumont. And he's just, like a number of people, very concerned about Beaumont's management decisions the past two or three years and the proposed merger with Advocate Aurora of Chicago.
Shevsky said that there was a survey of doctors at Beaumont that showed that these key physicians did not have confidence in Fox. It was sort of a vote of no confidence, but that the results of that survey was suppressed. I mean, it can be telling about staff morale, but could something like that actually stop the merger if it had been made public?
Well, you have to understand, Beaumont is a 1,000-bed, it's a flagship facility of Beaumont Health, eight hospital system based in Southfield. It's basically the second best hospital in Michigan after the University of Michigan. It's got 19 nationally ranked clinical programs. It's no slouch. It spends $300 million a year on capital projects. It probably raises half that much a year. There's a lot of interest in Beaumont Health, but the one thing that Beaumont has gotten away from, I don't know if you remember this advertising campaign, do you have a Beaumont doctor?
Mm-hmm.
The doctors used to essentially run the hospital. They're very used to asking for things and getting them. That hasn't been the case, really, since the Affordable Care Act came into effect, cut Medicare payments. And also since John Fox has been there, he's brought in a new kind of management style and a new culture. So the doctors, there's been two physician surveys. They weren't so much suppressed as discouraged among some Beaumont executives and high-ranking Beaumont-employed doctors, chiefs of departments. There's also a nursing survey. Both showed 80% or more dissatisfaction with Beaumont's management, opposition to the merger. It really started spilling out those complaints to these major donors like Mark Shevsky. There's other donors that are involved. I shouldn't name them right now, but they've all got wings and departments named after them. And they have been talking with the Beaumont board, talking with Beaumont management about these issues, and they've been essentially blocked. And that's what Shevsky told me yesterday, that he sent that letter to A.G. Nessel out of frustration, mm-hmm. that their voices weren't being heard. And he thought that she might be able to take some action. Now, she probably won't be able to take any action unless the board of Beaumont, the board of Advocate, gives final approval to the letter of intent.
So what are you hearing about whether Advocate Aurora is still interested in this merger after this information came out?
Yeah, I interviewed Jim Scogsworth, the CEO of Advocate Aurora, about 2 weeks ago, and he believes that this is a temporary issue, as does John Fox, that the doctors will get over it or that it'll just blow over. I was told by Shevsky, who's in contact with some board members, that both boards, and I've reported this too, late this fall at a board meeting, they'll vote for the merger. There is a minority of board members that, and it's been growing, who are getting opposed to this. And so time will tell whether more donors, if they come out in support of Shevsky, and Shevsky, let's be clear, he wants John Fox, CEO, fired, Carolyn Wilson, COO, fired, and Dr. David Wood, chief medical officer, fired. He wants essentially Nestle to disallow the merger. If she does allow the merger, he wants certain guarantees written in to any merger approval, similarly to what happened when Vanguard acquired DMC and AG Mike Cox required Vanguard, the owner at the time, to spend $750 million. So she could take some action. However, I am hearing from the maybe wishful thinking that the Beaumont board will terminate this merger and John Fox will retire and they'll hire a new CEO who's a physician. That's what people, I guess, are hoping for. That's what I hear everybody talking about. And I know a couple of board members would like to do that.
Jay, heady politics when it comes to internal nonprofit board stories. But what do you think this story tells us about shifts in power in the medical industry over recent years?
Well, I've been covering healthcare now, I hate to say it, for 40 years. And the composition and the power, let's say, of boards has changed dramatically. The chairman of the boards used to be almost the main spokesman. You could call him or her up and ask them, what about this or what about that? And sometimes you call the CEO up and he or she would refer you to the chairman. That's totally changed. Boards now are subservient in many cases to the CEO and the top management. Basically, they're done what they're told. A lot of hospitals are monkey see, monkey do. If one hospital executive says, we need to be bigger to be better, we need size to improve our quality and get a lower bond rating and hire the best CEOs, other hospitals will do the same thing. And that seems to be the case with Beaumont. They want to be bigger. They think bigger is better. This has been happening for years and years. There's no evidence that merger reduces costs to consumers, improves quality, yet they do it anyway. So we'll see what happens.
Jay Green is a senior reporter at Crain's Detroit Business. Jay, thank you so much for your time and expertise on this.
Okay, no problem, April. Have a good day.
After the break, hip-hop artist Nisha Nishe talks about turning her back on a record contract and redefining her goalposts for 2020.
And I was just listening to what everybody felt was right for me to be putting out there, you know, and then I had to tap into my truth and just live through it on my own. I couldn't let people live my truth for me.
Don't go away. We'll meet her in just a minute. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. As we all reset our expectations for 2020, blowing through Plan A, Plan B, and sometimes even Plan C, hip-hop artist Nisha Nishe offers a fascinating case study in making the most of what you have.
Don't forget to tell your people that you love them. Don't forget to live it up your best days. Don't forget to be grateful when you up one. Don't forget to be thankful when you wear. You can have the money and the fame and attention. What's that really matter? Cause you can't take it with you. People know your name.
Nishe, who's been on a steady upward trajectory across Michigan stages, started the year with Roc Nation Records. She's toured with Big Sean and other artists of note. By the time this spring rolled around, the deal foundered, and she and her manager were making plans for independent releases. Nishe has been dropping songs and videos this year with intention and charting a path toward a wider audience, even as the lockdown proceeds. Nisha Nishe, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Well, in the past year, you had, you know, 2020 was supposed to be a big year business-wise for you. You had negotiated a contract with Roc Records and had this plan to build an even bigger audience for your music on top of your gains for the past couple of years. Could we just, before we talk about what happened next, could you just tell us a little bit about what it took to get you to that point in your career?
Well, I started off signed to an independent label called Federation Music Group, and we partnered up to, you know, collab with Roc Nation on a venture and everything. And Roc Nation just had happened to get a new president, and they ended up, you know, releasing a couple artists. But I still have a really strong relationship with them, and, you know, they're super cool. And when I did sign with them, we ended up putting out the video for I'ma Go Crazy. And I put out an EP called Queening through them. And they both did really well. It was a great learning experience for me. Just, I feel like, you know, sometimes in life when you, when you're a new artist, you know, you just, the deals and all that sounds really amazing and the money and all that. But I've been finding myself being way more productive and hands-on and just, you know, feeling more like myself being independent. So, you know, I believe everything happens for a reason, and I'm grateful to have exceeded the amount of success I have thus far at my age.
You know, a lot of your recent work upends what I think people may expect of artists. Your songs are as likely to be about staying centered and really valuing the people in your life as they are to be about relationships or, you know, getting somewhere in your career. How do you see audience reacting to a song like New Day?
I come way too far to look back. I pick it all up right where I left. I know that they can't stand that I'm blessed. But these new people have to take this shit to the chest. Cause I made a promise, make it regardless. I just let them gossip, I don't beg no pardons. I need my deposit, I ain't with the talking. I know I was chosen, focused on my focus. I'll stand up with bosses, bounce back from my losses. Crossing me gon' cost them. Coming from the bottom's only part of my story.
I believe that my audience that I've grown over the past 5-6 years have come to be more of a cult following, to where it doesn't really matter what I put out, but the people that really support me and rock with me, they're receiving, you know, my new transformation, my transition. I've started coming differently as far as my writing and the message behind my music. Yeah, being centered around being able to, you know, keep going and stay focused and be hard working outside of the trials and tribulations you experience. So, you know, people love New Days. They love the things change. My more personable records, they're setting with people, you know, but I think I just have to, you know, continue to be me, and they'll catch on.
Was there a time when you might have been a little more hesitant to talk about those things in songs and reveal those parts of yourself?
Absolutely. When I first started doing the music, I was hesitant and fearful, and I was kind of confused, and I was just listening to what everybody felt was right for me to be putting out there, you know. And then I had to tap into my truth and just live through it on my own. I couldn't let people live my truth for me, so that's where I became more comfortable in, you know, just telling my story. I don't tell my story for people to feel bad for me. I tell it for people alike that can relate and find a light in my story and how I overcame my obstacles. So,
when you first started with your writing, would you say that your songs were more about trying to conjure better things for yourself, or more focused on expressing hard things that were your reality at that time?
I think when I first started writing music, it was more of an expression for me. I didn't know if it would ever make sense or make sense to other people, but I just knew it was a way for me to release, you know, things that I couldn't during the day normally. Like, I find peace in writing my feelings down. And, you know, like I said, when I first started doing the music, I had a lot of opinions, and I had a lot of people telling me, you know, what kind of music they wanted me to make and what I should be sounding like and all these other things. So, you know, it just took me waking up one day and realizing that my amount of success is going to be based off of the work I put in and how I feel about the music I put out and how I feel about myself. Like, it really doesn't matter what people think of me and their opinions and all those other things. So now it's about expressing myself and knowing that I have a purpose and people that are listening to me and a fan base. So
is there a song that you think marks the beginning of that period in your writing when you really just started to follow your own voice?
Things Change.
Cause what would life be if everything stayed the same? I pray that I still hold it down even when I go away. It's okay. You gon' lose some people that you really want to stay. Things change. Things change. I remember all the times I really felt like giving up. I had people say
that people call me dumb. I don't look back on my losses, I just keep on moving up. All the things that I've been through, who'd ever thought I was the one? You know I come from the bottom, had to grind to get it up. Lost my mom when I was younger, made it hard for me to love. And my dad ain't been around, it made it hard for me to trust. Had to turn my life to music before I turned my life to drugs.
That was recent. That was this year that I put that out, and I was in the studio. When I wrote that record, I was thinking about how I struggled, you know, so much in my life to accept change and losing people and relationships not working that I thought would work and et cetera. And, you know, just to put out there that it's okay for change. It's okay to accept it. And it's okay for things not to go how you plan them to, you know?
Change. Now they asking for forgiveness. I just had to let it go and just get focused on my business. Rather be up in the field than be warming up these. Rather get up on my than be sitting around these. I can't stand wasting my time. I'd rather be getting my ticket. What do I really be doing if it's not making a difference? I get discouraged sometimes when I'm putting in the grind. That's why I keep people around.
The video for Things Change is really, really it feels really personal. It's a shoot with you and your sister. Mm-hmm. It's your sister, right?
Yep, that's my sister.
Yeah, and you two, you know, spent some time at the shoot at, I believe it's your mom's grave.
Yep.
That's a lot to let people in on.
Yeah, that was actually surreal for me because it had been a few years, actually. You know, I haven't gone to see my mother since she passed. So, you know, going with my sister actually was something that we probably both needed in order just to move on in a way and just to connect on that. Because my sister and I deal with things so differently. We never really talked about our mom passing or anything. We kind of just went about life, you know? So I also went back to the basketball court that I used to play basketball at. So that was super cool, too.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about what you and your sister's childhoods were like?
Yes, my sister, she's my only sister. I also have a half-sister, but I don't see her often. We were in foster care for a couple years while we were young, and my father and his new girlfriend came and got us. From then, for a couple years, we, you know, experienced physical abuse and sexual abuse. And we ended up in foster care, and my aunt and my grandpa came and adopted my sister and I, and we were raised by them and lived pretty beautiful lives thanks to them.
Yeah. A song like Things Change, do you think that's a song that you could have written maybe 5 years ago?
Absolutely not, because I couldn't accept change. I wasn't okay with things becoming different in my life, so.
What do you think it was that made it possible for you to unlock some of that?
Just experiencing different emotions and pain. And, you know, I think that, like Nipsey said, you have to experience all the emotions in life, from anger to happiness. And there's levels to anger and happiness. And, you know, I really had to become more okay with just being me and telling people my story and not worrying about being judged and all those other things. And that gave me the ability just to, you know, write more freely and not overthink when I'm trying to create a record. It just comes from the heart, and that's the realest stuff.
If you're just joining us, my guest is artist Nisha Nashe. She's been dropping a series of very widely listened to singles and EPs over the past 5 years. Do you miss being on stage?
Absolutely. Being on stage is one of my favorite places to be. You know, it's just it gives me the ability to put my physical energy behind the records that people are just hearing online. And I get to actually, you know, connect with my fans in real time. So I do miss it. I can't wait till the world opens back up.
Yeah. There's something that I wanted to ask you about performing that I'm almost not even sure if I should ask, because I think for a lot of women hip hop artists, and R&B artists, there's such a hyper focus on, you know, looks and how you are on stage. But you have like a really strong physicality. I'm not sure if it's because you had a background as a high school athlete or what, but you just there's a confidence there that I think a lot of artists are just like trying to get to but don't really reach. Do you have any thoughts on sort of how you inhabit your stage presence and like how you get yourself physically ready for shows?
I know exactly how it feels to be one of those artists trying to find my confidence and my aura and how I'm going to present myself on stage. I was one of those artists when I first started. I also took artist development classes, which really helped me a lot with my stage presence and my performances. Outside of that, I think it just took me, when I went on tour with Big Sean, I honestly studied this man and all his shows and how he moved and how he dealt with people and how he executed his shows. And it taught me, you know, just I have to put my all in it and I have to be tapped in and aware. And it's just the perfect moment to, you know, like if someone never heard of you or heard of your music before and they just came to the show and happened to see you for the first time, this is your moment to get them to fan you. So I just take my performances very seriously, and I do have confidence, but it took me experiencing shows where people weren't really feeling me and the empty buildings and, you know, those type of things for me to gain the confidence I have now. And my advice to anyone who is trying to find confidence on stage would be to, you know, be around people that have good energy, make sure that you're hydrated, and, you know, just zone out and just be you, because people are either going to love you or hate you. But the only way you can win is by being yourself. I would rather be nobody else. You already know. Only be me. I can only be myself. 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 Never that you in competition with yourself. AKA get it and I keep it real. My name, my money, line keep bringing. They knew we would make it. It was meant to be. Pretty pennies, the money. We talked to another artist recently who made a reference to just the exhaustion of being out and being a public presence and supporting other people's shows. And that in, you know, of course, there's a lot of hardship in this time, but that also it's been a bit of a break and a moment when maybe it's okay to step back from some of the things that artists usually do that, frankly, are, you know, take up a lot of time and a lot of emotional energy. Are there things that this period is doing for you creatively? Absolutely. I have learned to record myself on Pro Tools 10, and I dropped my own lash line because I've always loved lashes. I have learned how to do certain like edits and mixes on my records. And I think that this pandemic has given me an opportunity just to be more connecting with my sexuality and my beauty and my creativity and my thoughts and my peace, and gives me more time to meditate. So yeah, I got the studio at the house, and whenever I feel like I can catch a vibe or I want to record some music, I just get right to the studio, like, and it's beautiful. I've loved every moment of it.
You know, it's funny. There was a time when being a bedroom producer was an optional thing. And yeah. Now it's like the only thing.
Yeah. Saves you money and, you know, you don't have to worry about any, you know, COVID things going on. Like, it's like the most safe place right now is the house.
Totally. Do you have any long-term plans to drop a full album?
Absolutely. I haven't dropped any albums thus far in my career, but I do plan on, you know, if not the end of this year, hopefully 2021, I will, you know, lock into artist album creative mode and I'll put out my first big album.
Is there in some ways maybe a benefit to just sort of having songs that you can drop like breadcrumbs and people can just get a little taste here and a little taste there? I mean, at the stage in where you are, is there some benefit to that?
I believe that if you can stay consistent, as other legendary artists have, and, you know, putting content out there and releasing, you know, good songs. Not all the songs will take. They won't always blow up or get all the views you think they will. But as long as it's out there, it's almost like preparing yourself for your future. You put all these records out and et cetera, like Russ did. This is something someone was talking to me about a few days ago. You put all these records out. He had a whole catalog on SoundCloud that he had put out prior to signing his deal. After he signed his deal, all those records that he put out, you know, got more views and blew up beyond what they had due to the machine that he now suddenly had behind him. Not only that, with those songs that he released were his, so he got all those royalties. And so it's just about having, you know, like a structured plan and being innovative about putting music out. Yeah, you could put music out back to back, but it's like, what are you doing differently that's making your music stand out from all the other people dropping music back to back and things like that? My main goal is just to be consistent and just to keep growing as an artist creatively. I mean, I know that I've come a long way with my writing and the quality of my music and my performances and everything. And I know it'll only get better from here.
Nisha Nishe, it's been awesome talking to you. Thank you for taking a couple minutes with us.
Yay, of course. Thank you for talking to me. It was wonderful. You have amazing questions.
Hey, you take care of yourself, okay?
You too, Queen. Thank you.
Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs. Up next, we check in with parents and kids feeling their way through the first days of virtual schooling this semester.
Planning is sort of what we try to do, and it feels like there hasn't been a lot of planning how they're going to accomplish this virtual learning thing.
Strap in and stay with us. This is Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. At this point, just about all of Michigan's school kids are back to class, whether that's via Zoom meeting, physically distanced, or shepherded by grown-ups at home. And how's that going for everybody?
How is school? Do you like school so far or no?
I do.
Is it boring or is it fun?
It's boring.
It's boring? Why is it boring?
Because I hate staying there for a long time.
You don't like staying there for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? What do you do while you're in class?
Nothing.
Do you sit in your chair and look at the computer?
Yeah.
Dustin Walsh is a reporter for Crane's Detroit Business, and what you just heard is him with one of his preschool twin boys. Needless to say, we thought it was a good time for a welfare check-in. Dustin, you in one piece over there?
I'm not drunk yet.
Okay.
That's about all I can say. No, I'm in one piece. We're doing okay.
I gotta ask, what is virtual learning for preschoolers? I mean, what does that even sound like and look like?
Well, it's pretty chaotic. You know, the way they started out was all 22 kids into basically one Google Meetup or Zoom type program. And then, of course, a bunch of kids with headphones on. And so their parents who are either working and too busy or just simply can't hear don't know that they have to mute the mics. So it's a lot of background noise and parents doing dishes and parents on their own calls mixed in with a bunch of 5-year-olds and 4-year-olds yelling over each other. So a bit intense, actually.
What's the flow of the day like?
There is no flow. So it's wake up. They have their first Zoom meeting at 8:15. So my wife and I, both working from home, are kind of adjusting to having our schedules blown up every day. And it's a few different meetings per day with different you know, different numbers of kids in each meeting, and then a couple of assignments they have to complete. And usually by the afternoon, they're sort of done. And we can, you know, resume sort of some functional level of normalcy or what's been normal since March.
I mean, is it possible, do you find, for kids that age to really listen to other students in a way that you kind of have to on something like a Zoom interaction?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, every time they're in one of these meetings, it requires an all hands on deck from my wife and I. We have to be with, you know, we have twins, so each one of us has to be with the child to help them get through that meeting. It's a lot of boredom for these kids waiting for other kids to talk.
I'm fascinated to hear how your boys, being twins, are playing out this social experiment. Do you think that they've each absorbed and interacted a little bit differently with the virtual classroom?
Yes, I have one son that is, he's a little more calm with it. Like he kind of likes to just kind of look. He's the more quiet one. So he kind of sits in his chair a little better. And then I have kind of a more explosive, hyperactive type son who really struggles not being able to have that kind of center of attention. He likes to be the center of attention. And obviously via Zoom, it's really hard to be the center of attention without being just obscenely obnoxious. And so he sort of struggles with this idea, and he's the one that seems to get bored very quickly. And every time we now have another class meeting, he doesn't want to really get on it because he knows that, he's going to be bored now.
How did you and your wife make the decision to do virtual preschool versus maybe something in person or trying to homeschool the boys?
We wanted to stick with the local school district just because I think it's important, funding, et cetera. And the options were both sort of miserable options, right? So they had the virtual program, which is what we ended up choosing, or the remote program, which was they were remote for, I think, you know, the guess is 6 weeks and then maybe back to in person in some way, shape, or form after 6 weeks. The issue was that in the first 6 weeks, they were going to have just kind of a rotating flow of teachers. And so we really worried about that, not having that stability of a teacher, particularly on something completely new to them. So we ended up choosing virtual. And then obviously we worry about safety. My wife and I both work in pretty demanding jobs. And so I rely on my in-laws to watch the kids in certain times after we've, kind of distanced through June. We now rely on them. So we didn't want to put them in harm's way. So that's kind of the decision we came up with. We still have no idea if it's the right one, but that's what we're working with.
I've got to ask, what has this been like for you and your wife?
I think one of us had, it wasn't me, but one of us had a nervous breakdown this morning, I think. it's been challenging, particularly, my wife works in the automotive industry and has a pretty high octane kind of job and, meetings and we're putting out fires at work, let alone trying to accomplish regular things. And this is kind of throwing a wrench in that. And there hasn't been a lot of planning. I think that's where for people in our fields, a journalist and an engineer, planning is sort of what we try to do. And it feels like there hasn't been a lot of planning. And it's kind of fly by night, seat of your pants kind of thing, which at least in the first 2 days, it doesn't feel like is working very well. But again, it's early. Maybe these wrinkles will be ironed out and we'll all be happy by the end. But right now, stress levels are definitely through the roof in my household.
It feels like you're just in this position where you just got through the daycare years. This was supposed to be the onset of you having more time, right? Not less.
Yeah, we were looking forward to putting our kids on a bus and picking them up at the end of the day, and that got blown up as well. So now we're spending our time and money on desks, chairs, and learning utensils or learning equipment, etc.
Would you take that tuition back if you had the opportunity?
I would gladly cut that $32,000 a year check tomorrow.
Dustin Walsh, father of two and a reporter for Crane's Detroit Business, thanks for talking to us and good luck, man.
Thanks. Pretty much appreciated. We need it.
To be honest, online schooling is not exactly a picnic for parents of older children either. I mean, some of us were challenged by helping with math homework at the best of times. Nancy Kaffer is a columnist with the Detroit Free Press and the mother of a fifth grader. She's been writing about online schooling lately and says that pit of despair you're feeling as a parent right now, it's exactly what you should be feeling. Nancy Kaffer, thanks for the affirmation and welcome back to Stateside.
I'm here to affirm all your feelings of despair, April.
No, really. How's it going?
Simultaneously, worse than I expected, and also not as bad as I expected on some fronts. My child is adapting to it better than I would have thought, but the challenges, still not adapting to it well, and the challenges are pretty significant, both technological and mental and educational. There's a lot of challenges happening.
Can you tell?
Spatial challenges.
Right.
Audio challenges. We have all the challenges, yeah. But it's a lot.
Can you tell me about some of the things that you overhear in the course of a day?
Well, that's an interesting thing. So our district has essentially taken the first 2 weeks as sort of a soft open. They're trying to set new norms around Zoom. They're trying to get some sense of where the kids are, given that they left in the middle of fourth grade. And they're just trying to get everyone comfortable with the technology. So there's a lot of just talking about, hey, don't don't spam the chat. But then there's also, you know, throughout the day I hear the assistant teacher saying, hey, so-and-so, you need to wake up. I see you drifting off. So the kids are like at home, so they're not maybe alert as they would be if they were in a classroom. There's just so many challenges to even just getting kids sort of engaged with the lesson in a way that they would be in the classroom. And the difficulty of doing that over the video call is just like, I don't know how they're doing it. It's a lot.
What kinds of things does your son say about this new thing that we're all doing now?
So my son, and I really can't blame him for this, he comes by it honestly, he's my child, wants to keep up a running commentary to me. We're working in the same room right now, unfortunately. It's a limitation of our space. We have to work in the same room. And he wants to keep up a running commentary to me about everything that's happening. Did you hear that? Did you hear what she said? Oh my goodness. So-and-so just sent something to the chat. He's going to get in trouble. She just told so-and-so to wake up.
You have a chatty office mate.
Yeah. Who would have thought my kid would have a lot to say?
Nancy recorded a conversation with her son about online schooling. Let's take a listen to a little bit of it.
What do you like about it?
I like how it's not as hard as it used to be.
Does it feel like real school?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, sort of, because, you know, you have to be on a computer, you're not actually in person, stuff like that.
Do you feel like it's going to be a good year?
Yes.
What distracts you?
Just that we're at home, because, you know, like, let's say our cat's just walking around the room. Hey, there's my cat. But in school, you won't be like, hey, there's my cat.
Because your cat doesn't go to school.
No. Oh, I wish. It's just she would be more smarter.
And also, you like to talk to me about what's happening.
Yes.
And I keep going. What do I say?
Pay attention.
Do you think you'll stop getting distracted?
Maybe.
Were you distracted literally right now when I asked that question?
Yes.
Do you miss seeing your friends in real life?
Yes.
Do you hope you'll be able to go back to face-to-face school soon?
Yes.
Nancy Kaffer, is it possible that this school year is just going to be one of those experiences like losing power during a storm that it's kind of hard to put a good face on? It's going to be not fun.
You know, I think I got a lot of emails from readers sort of chiding me for being negative about the school year because they're saying, you know, if you don't have a good attitude, how can you expect your son to have a good attitude? Well, you know, he's 10, so I don't need to tell him this experience is good or bad. He can kind of figure that out on his own. And not acknowledging that this is very challenging, I don't know that we're doing our kids a service if we pretend like this is okay or that this is normal. I mean, I do, you know, I maybe complain more in my columns than I actually do to my child. Just anyone listening wants to know about that. But you know, I think you're right. You can't say kids aren't dumb and you can't say this is fine, this is great and have them just be like, oh, okay, this is great. Is this going to be a complicated year? I would like to think that we're getting this under control and we'll be able to have face-to-face learning. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know whether schools are even prioritizing that. There's a good chance that we are going to be in an online format all year long. I don't know how meaningful education can be over Zoom. I know that teachers are working their hardest to make it happen. I know kids are trying their hardest to learn. But yeah, you know, I think we've got to kind of acknowledge this is not optimal. And that's part of why I've written as many columns as I have critical of this, is that online education is being presented like it is, you know, a full equivalent to being in school, and it simply isn't. What I wish that school districts had done was figure out, rather than try to replicate the day of school in an online format, which a lot of districts are doing. Some districts are doing things differently, but a lot of districts are simply delivering a standard day over a Zoom call. And what I wish they had done was to figure out what are the important things that happen in this day? What do we really need to do in person? How can we do that safely? And what can we deliver online? And how can we do that effectively? That seems to me like it would be a more successful way to approach this.
Nancy Kaffer is a columnist with the Detroit Free Press. Nancy, thanks for being with us and hang in there.
Thanks, April. You too.
We're coming up on the end of peach season in Michigan. The Cheers team has taken advantage of that this week, using peaches as a key ingredient in a drink called the Tempest. Just for the record, this one is not a Cheers. Tempest in a teapot. Let's take a listen.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Lester Graham.
That is Tammy Coxon of Tammy's Tastings, and you've got a mammoth drink, a spirit today. Aren't they from, like, around Traverse City someplace?
Yeah, up north. I know they have a tasting room in Traverse City.
Okay, what's the spirit you're using?
So I am using their rum, but I put a little twist on it for this drink.
Okay, another rum drink. All right. Well, you've proved me again and again that there
again
are ways that
again.
You can use rum that I will actually like. So I'm trusting you again. Why the rum? Why their rum?
Well, my inspiration for this drink was actually that it's peach season. And in my neighborhood, we have some shared peach trees, and they have been pretty bountiful this year. But a lot of them are a little bit on the wormy side or kind of small and not doing so great. So they're not necessarily something I want to eat out of hand, but I can totally muddle them up and put them into a cocktail.
Ah, and that's the muddling we hear then. Okay, so you've got muddled peaches and you've got mammoth rum. Where do you go from there?
Right, so I went looking online. That's my way to find recipes. I looked for ideas for peach cocktail recipes online, and I came across this one, which is kind of like a peach dark and stormy. Dark and stormy is a classic cocktail from Bermuda. It's got ginger beer, dark rum, and just a twist of lime in it. So this is kind of a peach variation, and it called for a spiced rum. And I went looking in my basement. We do have some great spiced rums from Michigan distilleries, but I don't personally have any of them. So I thought, what can I do with the rum that I already have? And I thought about one of my favorite infusion techniques. So we think of infusions as taking a long time, but if you infuse with tea, it takes hardly any time at all. And if you infuse with chai tea, then you've got spiced rum.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess you would. And that's what you did with this.
Right. So I just infused about a tablespoon of chai tea, loose leaf if you have it, or one tea bag if you don't, with 6 to 8 ounces of the mammoth rum. So you want an aged rum for this.
Now, you're not heating the rum or anything like that. You're just dropping it in there. How long do you leave it in there?
About 2 hours.
No? Okay.
So, you know, tea's made to infuse. So Even when it's not hot, it infuses quickly.
And how do you make it?
So muddled up the peaches, and I used probably about the equivalent of 2 slices from a regular size peach. I used most of my tiny little mealy peach, but about 2 slices of peach, muddled that up, added 1.5 ounces of my spiced rum, 1/2 ounce of lemon juice, and a couple dashes of Angostura bitters, which is just gonna add some complexity and some more spice notes. And now I'm going to shake it up with ice. And now that it's nice and cold and mixed, strain it off into a glass, either a tall glass or a short rocks glass, but one that's got some room for ice. But I'm not gonna put the ice in yet. I'm going to top the drink off with 3 ounces of ginger beer first, then fill it up with ice. That makes sure that the ginger beer and the rest of the drink ingredients get mixed together.
I'm kind of interested how the infused chai tea will taste with the rum and everything else. So sipping time?
Sipping time,
all right,
let's
go. Let's do that. I'm going to be honest, all I taste is the chai and the ginger beer. Should I be tasting the rum?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, definitely the rum is in there. But if you think about a dark and stormy, Moscow Mule, a Buck, all of those drinks really are about the ginger beer. Ginger beer kind of wins.
Okay. And there's a lot of it in there.
There's 3 ounces. A lot of it in here, but the chai definitely comes through. That spice note definitely comes through. The peach is in the background, but sweetening things up and rounding things out. I think this is a great patio sipper. Because you can't taste the rum as much, it might be dangerous.
Right. I'm going to check for the peach again. Yeah, okay. The peach is kind of like, it's in the middle there someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And you get hints of it. But it's not overwhelming. Like if you would have used a peach liqueur or something like that, that would have been too much.
Right. This is a very natural peach flavor, so it's not in your face. I'm not convinced that this is a rum drink that won you over.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this, but I could understand why people would like it. So, yeah, it's pretty rare when you make one that I don't really enjoy. I'm glad I tasted it, but I probably would not have more.
But for listeners who are fans of a Dark and Stormy or a Moscow Mule, trust me, you're going to like this one.
All right, well, cheers.
Cheers.
at Stateside for today. I'm April Bear. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch up with you next week.